Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a podcast and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. I am your host, Ashutosh Garg, and today I'm delighted to welcome an accomplished leader, an accomplished leadership coach, and as all of you know, I'm always partial to authors. I also have an accomplished author, Ashu Khanna from Mumbai. Ashu, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Ashutosh. A pleasure to be here.
Thank you. Ashu is the founder and CEO of Arka Leadership. She's focused on developing and inspiring people to grow into authentic leaders. She's an author of four books, I Am Freedom, I Am Life, I Am Perfection, and more. And she's a member of the YPO, which again is an organization that we are all very proud to belong to. So Ashu, let's start with your first comment that I was reading about, which is our relationship with our inner voice is the key to living joyously. Help me understand this with an example or an anecdote.
So our inner voice, we call it various things, or we experience it as intuition, instinct, all kinds of the divine voice. There are, you know, a sense of knowing. There are many ways that we associate it with. And for me, I think there were a couple of very strong turns in my life. Mm. One was, I'm one of those who was a classic case of love at first sight, mm-hmm. A very intuitive response to meeting my now husband. Mm-hmm. And I think it was just a sense of knowing he's right for me. Mm. Secondly, leaving the corporate world and jumping into coaching was a very intuitive leap of faith. Mm-hmm. It was really a realization that leadership development in India was not focused on. Mm-hmm. I don't come from the world of training or HR at all. So I had absolutely no background or backdrop in how to do it. Mm-hmm. But I think it just felt right that this is it. And when I have ever responded or trusted my intuition, my inner voice, it has never failed me. Never failed me. It is difficult. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't deny that. When I say never failed me, does it challenge me? Oh, undoubtedly.
Correct.
Because it often makes me question all the norms around me and, you know, the societal norms, the thinking, the perceptions, everything. Mm. But I feel lighter. I feel more clear, more conviction, more sorted. And ultimately, life is really at being peace with oneself. So that is really why I say it's about really living life joyously. Okay. So it's really at being peace and alive with myself.
Very interesting. So your inner voice is what your mind tells you or your heart tells you?
I don't know about the mind or the heart. I think it just goes beyond. I wouldn't put it into, people call it, it's my heart telling me, my gut telling me. It's got like, nowadays there's a lot about the gut brain. Mm. And our gut, so it is that gentle voice which I've given more power to now than the noise that existed earlier.
Fully understand. So Ashu, let's talk about Arka Leadership, an organization that you founded. Tell me about this venture and what defines or characterizes an authentic leader.
So, you know, one of the things that really took me onto this whole journey was about missing that part of humanness that I found in many leaders. It's being successful is a lot about putting your whole self forward with some expertise, some vision, some skills, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. But to remain human while being successful is an art. Mm-hmm. And I miss that in the corporate world many a times. And that is what I mean by authentic leadership, where you don't lose touch with who you are at your core.
Correct.
And, you know, it's your values, you're at integrity with your values. you're not, I mean, all of, and even accepting that I'm a hypocrite, all of us are hypocrites at times.
In our own ways.
In our own ways. Correct. So I think it's really accepting that I'm no different from another in many ways, having that compassion, having that openness and being secure in who you are, being absolutely free to be yourself and allow, give another the space to be themselves. So authentic leadership is someone who is really anchored in their authentic or inner self.
Okay.
And where there is no gap in, when you talk about, you know, often you'll say that it was very nice talking to someone because there's no facade. You can trust the person. There's a sense of comfort. So there's no gap between how one thinks, feels, and acts. Now, that level of alignment is not easy to have.
Mm.
Because often there are many agendas and they're very subconscious.
Mm.
We don't even realize they just become our behavior. That there are agendas that layer our behavior. And when there is no agenda, another person is also absolutely able to be agenda-less or focused on just the relationship.
Mm.
And that's the beauty of life, that ability to connect at the core. It's an absolute, you know, authentic leaders, a person who is able to be secure in themselves and offer space to another.
Mm.
Instinctively or just by way of being, offer space to another to feel empowered, creative, innovative, expressive. Mm. It is that whole, I think consciousness comes alive there, is what I would say.
Very interesting. So, you know, when I was reading about you and what in the last 5-6 minutes that we have spoken, you've spoken about the inner voice, you've spoken about authentic leadership, you are a leadership coach. So I want to discuss a few points relating to coaching with you. And let's go back to the Gita. And I wanted to get your perspective that it's often been said Lord Krishna was probably the first coach the world ever knew when he coached Arjun. What are your thoughts?
I firstly am very inspired by the Bhagavad Gita and by the wisdom as well as the way Lord Krishna and, you know, the whole conversation that unfolds. Firstly, he recognizes that Arjuna is extremely overwhelmed and he gives him space to shed that overwhelm. There's no judgment. There is just space to shed the angst, which is okay, which is what then creates. But when he notices that Arjuna is now getting carried away in that victimhood or helplessness. So there is a very fine line between allowing somebody to shed your emotions versus really staying in that whole space, you know, of the drama.
Right.
And he actually, it's like yanks him out of it and says, you're not the body.
Mm.
And that statement is pierces through the ego of Arjuna and makes him sit back. Because at that moment, it's such a provocative statement and something so what he could never have even imagined. The association has been suddenly broken away that it brings the curiosity out of Arjuna.
Correct.
Which was missing in the first part, you know, as the conversation starts. It provokes the curiosity and it suddenly starts even bringing, making him contemplative.
Mm-hmm.
That what is he trying to say? And what am I missing? So the intelligence or the depth of the discernment comes alive as well.
Correct.
And as the Bhagavad Gita unfolds, there is not a single question that Krishna leaves unanswered.
Mm-hmm.
But at all times, there is compassion. Mm-hmm. And compassion in all shades.
Right.
At times, it is compassion where there is a response. At times, it is a little bit of yanking, which
challenging, absolutely.
The tough love is also there.
Correct.
There is tough love, which is as much a shade of compassion. And I think often people forget that tough love is as much a shade of compassion as is empathy.
Correct.
And you experience through the Bhagavad Gita that he patiently goes through the entire conversation, keeping the temperament of the coachee alive, very much in his awareness, and yet very focused that I have to get him to understand what did I mean by that statement. So at no point does he lose focus of the goal or the objective of the conversation. He doesn't ride onto the drama of the client.
Very well said. Very well said. So a hypothetical question for you next, and which, you know, that is that if Karna had Lord Krishna as his coach, what may have changed in his life?
See, all of us. So firstly, let's understand who is Krishna. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest misnomer is that people think that Krishna is a religious embodiment or figure, a leader. But no, he is a symbolic of the observer, the witness in us, consciousness. And he is only symbolic of that. And that exists in all of us. So when you say that, could he have had access? Oh, we all have access. But do we choose to stay loyal to the ego, or are we willing to shed the ego and go with our consciousness is a choice we all have. And Karna made the choice to go with Duryodhan, which was the ego. His loyalties were more about, I've always served and he's been loyal. Of course, your ego serves you. Oh man, how? But it's a difficult choice. Can you discern between the service of the two?
Fascinating. Fascinating. So moving on, a couple of, you know, what I would say a little mundane questions on coaching. And, you know, and I've often been asked this, that how do I evaluate that I have a good coach?
See, it's a lot about comfort, chemistry. But I think it's also about understanding what is it that you're looking to unfold in yourself? I think often people go so much for comfort that they forget it's about challenge as well.
Correct.
When you want to unfold, you need someone who can mirror that attribute in you. And that is really the best way of discerning who's right for you. No doubt there needs to be trust and comfort, because, you know, you're bearing your soul out there. But you need that ability to say, this time I need a stick, another time I might need a carrot. Let's go according to that. So that awareness is indeed difficult at times, but it all depends what your goal is.
Well said. Let's move on and talk a little bit about the millennials and the Gen Zs, the people who have started to inherit the world. I have a lot of respect for all these young people because of the way they live and the way they manage themselves. My question to you is that, how can coaching set up millennials and the Gen Zs or the young managers to thrive in the workplace?
So, Ashutosh, I'm a mom to two Gen Z kids.
Correct.
My sons are 26 and 21, completely the millennial. If two things, one is they are very sharp and intelligent, and one cannot assume they won't understand. I think that's the biggest mistake one makes sometimes, is thinking they are young, they're kids, they don't understand. You talk to them at an adult to adult level, the conversation teaches you. The second thing is they're fearless. And if you give them that space to experiment and just say, I'm behind you, they need to have that comfort. Yes, Are you totally letting go? No, you are observing and, you know, giving necessary sometimes feedback. But again, feedback needs to be given. So I'll just narrate a little conversation we had today morning. Talking to my younger son, he said, no, I don't want to be talking to, you know, giving a full report on or talking every day. I'm good with what I'm doing. So I think it was a big conflict between how do I support him as a parent when I know he needs the support, and yet how do I let him be? So I asked him, I said, I understand you want to be left alone. Sure. Are you okay to brainstorm and not update? Is that how you are trying to distinguish the two? The minute I broke it into two parts, I don't want to update, I'm good to brainstorm. He said, that's what I've been saying all along. Of course, I'm
okay.
I'm okay. So it's that I think they're demanding that trust me for what I know, but I'm open to engaging, but don't keep asking me every day and making me feel judged.
Well done. So
I think that is what is they're demanding respect, whereas our generation was more respectful of our elders.
Correct.
And this generation is respectful but equally demanding of respect. I think that's the difference, very big difference.
Very well said. So Ashwin, now I'm going to move to the next segment, and that's about your books. And I know you've got a forthcoming new book coming up also. But first tell me, you know, about your four books, I Am Freedom, I Am Life, I Am Perfection, and others. You know, tell me about some of the hypotheses in your books.
So, firstly, these are a personal account of my insights. It's my journey of transformation. It gradually became, I think the best thing I would say is it became a way to clear myself, empty myself, very cathartic process, very, it helped me get more clear in what I want, what am I looking at. So it's insights from my inner voice as I've questioned life and all the perceptions and beliefs and identifications that existed in me. So I Am Freedom is really about a young woman feeling very caught in the societal and beliefs of what's right and wrong. And that's where it really comes down to that the inner self is always free, and hence the assertion, I am freedom. The second book, I Am Life, is a really a book of questioning my identifications. And getting into the deeper space of who am I. So once the clutter is gone, then you go deeper. And as I went deeper, I realized that I am as anybody experiences me. It's got enough, it's really who I project to be.
Correct.
And that projection is takes the longest to is ultimately dependent on what relationship are you identifying in that equation. If you're putting no identification, but you're engaging on a human to human level, that's how the relationship emerges. And, you know, coming back to the Bhagavad Gita there, Krishna is engaging with Arjuna as a friend, as a confidant. And often we get so caught up in, I'm a parent, I am XYZ, or I'm a leader, that you forget that ultimately we are all human beings.
Correct.
So that's what that, and that's how the book is just titled, I Am Life Is. Then came about my book of poems. That I think was the biggest surprise of all for me. Not that others have not been, because I never saw myself as a writer to begin with. But poems would have been an unheard of. So there was like literally a child emerging out of me, a child who penned down poems in one minute. It didn't take me more than a minute to write it down. And the excitement that I experienced, the gratitude that it overwhelmed out of it. And that's why the book got titled To That With Love and Reverence. I dedicated that book to my parents.
Mm-hmm.
And my next book came down to being I Am Perfection. You know, each time I say, oh my God, that one blew me away.
Mm.
But this one clearly did, because when I started penning down, so my way of writing really is that I just pour out.
Mm.
And I just keep my dumping on my laptop.
Mm-hmm. It's,
and at some point I'll sit and cull out and clean up.
Correct.
Now with this book, I had put some 30 plus chapters together, and I actually went away to Goa to, I told, you know, my family, I need a week off to figure this book out. It's really haunting me now. Ashutosh, when I put the 30 chapters in front, suddenly they collapsed into 7.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that when you say suddenly it collapsed, that's nothing but a, you know, the observer, the consciousness working through you.
Mm-hmm.
And that book ended up being the whole pathway of the mind to living from the unanchored or the manas, mm-hmm. To yoga. And that's how authentic leadership, the whole thing came into being, that
right.
I have really been gifted with the whole path. Then that book translated into a framework, mm-hmm. and then a training course. So that book has served me in so many ways.
Mm.
So I don't know about the rest of the world, but they've served me in a huge way,
mm.
into growing into the person I am. And that's why my next book is really about the miracles of life.
Okay.
Do we experience life as a series of miracles or series of problems? And I see it as a series of miracles, really.
Incredible. Incredible. So, and so just one more question on the books. Are all these books available on Amazon?
They are. Thank you. Yes, they are.
Okay, terrific. So I have time for two more questions, and I have time to debate what to ask you. But for someone who has achieved so much in life and is continuing to do so many amazing things, from where you stand today, what does success mean to Ashu?
Being true to myself. That's it. Nothing else.
Fair enough. And a follow-up question to that, which would be my last question. Who or what inspires you?
My inner self again. Nothing. Mm-hmm. My whole commitment to be true to myself. And I think the constant magic or the unfoldment that I experience is inspiration enough and motivation. Knowing that there is always an answer.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that there is always something new. So I thrive on newness.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that there's always something new, knowing that there's always a puzzle that I will not have an answer to, and mm-hmm. I will go through the emotions of angst and what have not, every emotion.
Mm-hmm.
I think just that miracle called life inspires me.
Amazing. Amazing. Ashu, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you. Thank you for taking me down this amazing journey you have had from a corporate professional to a coach to an author, and thank you for talking to me so much about your learnings from the Gita and how you're applying it to leadership and coaching. Thank you again, and good luck.
Thank you so much, Ashutosh. And you know, all when you talk about what inspires, the manifestations, I think the possibilities we see externally,
mm-hmm.
Mind-blowing what is possible and is, yeah. Yeah, so thank you so much for giving me this opportunity to share about my inspiration. Thank you.
Thank you again. Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.